From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show that tells you about Windows internals and Microsoft internals. We need to work on that, getting that to roll off my tongue easier. It's a little
bit, and we also need to do more of the Microsoft internal stuff.
And we will. We're talking about it. We'll figure it out.
A bit of on-location stuff.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Go see some of the sites. It's a beautiful summer here.
Yeah.
Get out, take the camera outside.
Northwest is breaking all the heat records from the 80s or something?
So the first summer I ever spent in Seattle, I was up here for like a month, and it was like 1992, and it was the hottest I can even imagine. And now this is where like our viewers in Arizona are going, yeah, right. But here's the thing. Nobody here has air conditioning. Well, maybe you do.
I don't actually.
I don't.
My house is a glorious 68 degrees.
Yeah, well, many people here do not have air conditioning because, you know, it's like, you know, what do you need it like two weeks out of the year, really?
I mean, yeah. Come on. Well, I came from Australia where it gets warm too, like in the hundreds, and I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
I installed it.
My house is built in like 1902. There's no air conditioning there.
Yeah.
It's pretty hot. It's been pretty hot, toasty.
Blue skies.
Yeah. Blue skies, been beautiful, but you know, people here complain about the heat when it hits like 80. Yeah. So
it's good to see Mount Rainier wherever you look.
It is.
That's kind of cool.
Clear skies. It's been very nice.
But
they're supposed to be breaking some more records, like those records back in 92 when I was first here. I think they're all breaking them. I read somewhere that last weekend they broke the all-time temperature record for Washington State. Someplace out in central Washington hit like 119 or 120 or some horrible temperature.
Some deadly rate, yeah.
It's like, yeah. Right. So what are we doing?
Hey,
we're talking about yeah. We got more debugging.
Yeah.
We did some debugging last week, looked at some dump files. Gonna do that again.
We did access violations, or we did one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a fair few CLR-based ones. So it was a little bit CLR-focused. there's a whole lot of dump files in the folder that are actually Windows Store application-based ones, whether it's the foreground UI app or the background. Got updates to install. Or the background task. So there's the foreground and background idea.
Mm.
So that's, and they're obviously they're going to have different purposes, but let's go through them. So let's start with the foreground first. Let's start with a WWA host. So if you natively compile your application, you're going to be end up with an executable name like Solitaire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it more like a package in DLL form, then WWA host is going to host it for you, right?
Yeah.
And so don't think it's much like background task host is also a hosting service. So think of it like SVC host is used for NT services and DLL host is used for COM and or DCOM, various other things.
Mm-hmm.
WWA host is just another one of those things. So let's open this guy up. Now, all of these are going to have the same exception code, this C00027B, and that's the magic number for stowed exception. And so if we use PDE's error command, if you just type error by default, it actually reads it out of the exception context record for you, so you don't have to type it.
Nice.
Because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
So, I could have, obviously pasted it on the end, but it's getting it from there. It's actually getting explicitly, it's getting it from the exception record.
Mm.
All right, it's pulling it from here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about stowed exceptions. Actually, there was episodes on this. Things have moved on. There was a bit more secrecy about it in the past. We've opened up we've gone from a private to a public API on it. And so it's a little bit easier these days. I'm not going to delve into the internals as deep as I did last time, mainly because I want to look at stowed exceptions, not actually for the stowed exception itself, but actually the follow-on effect and how it relates to XAML and the CLR and various other things. So I have no idea what's wrong with this dump file. Actually, I don't remember. So, but I do know it's a stowed exception. And so instead of having to work all this out, well, I should have mentioned this since it is my day job. Bang Analyze minus V answers all these questions most of the time.
We're showing you the hard way.
Yeah, we are showing. I mean, if you, yeah, it's going to give you the answer.
You think?
I should have mentioned that last week too.
Yeah.
But
we'll make people do it the hard way first. And then,
well, it's good to learn the fundamentals, I think. It is. That's kind of the approach we took.
Yeah, and what happens if Bang Analyze doesn't tell you? Then you know, then what are you going to do?
They yell at me because I.
Well, then you email Andrew.
Yeah. Or what it's and then, so this actually is going to give us a clue that SOS is required and it's missing. So, now let's do it the hard way. Because the exception record is 27B, if you run PDE display stored exception, dumps stored exception, whatever you want to call it, DSE, it's going to, much like the error command did, it's going to pull this out and it goes, I know what that is. And then it's going to read this parameter and this parameter. So this says there is one exception at this address. Or this array of addresses.
And we know that because that's just always the case for this STOTUS exceptions.
That's the rule, yeah. And so sometimes this can be as high as 6, right? So there's actually 6 exceptions to look at. And it's because STOTUS exception is actually a packing mechanism. As errors are propagated from process to process and thread to thread and awaiting thread and awaiting thread, they are caught, they are bundled, they are serialized, marshaled, whatever word you want to use, and then they are queued, actually for propagation and for dealing with it, which is an important point because they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. The thread that it came from is gone, and that's what we're going to kind of go through. So, DSE, display store exception, it knows how to do this. It does a whole lot of magic, and particularly if you have the version 10 version of DSE, which came out on our hiatus a couple of months ago, actually the week of the build conference.
This is what Andrew was doing when he was not making Defrag Tools shows.
It was actually. I added support for, there's two versions of the CLR. There's the CLR that we know and love, managed code, C#, all that stuff. And then there is Project N, which is the code name for MRT. I don't know what MRT stands for. It might be Microsoft Runtime or something. But there's the CLR version of the CLR, and there's the MRT version of the CLR. And both of them have SOS as their debugging edifice. And I updated it so that both the CLR SOS and the MRT SOS are supported from here. Now, this particular one has an STOTUS exception that doesn't relate to, it didn't automatically invoke the SOS analysis because it would be here at the end. But what we're looking at is an array of things. So this address is going to match this one, right? And then the first address in that array is at this point, and then there's this thing called a back trace stack. And so it's not a thread in its own right. It's just an array of instruction pointers that represent a call stack. There's no local variables. There's no parameters. All that stuff is in ancient history as far as a process is concerned. But yeah, you can see the sequence. Now, most of the time, you will see this row originate language exception because this is the command or the API that takes an exception and bundles it up. And I'm actually going to show the API for this, even though you're not going to code to it, but it's important to understand what it achieves. And what we're going to do is we're going to have an error message, an error code, and we'll see in here, I've already got it for you. I've actually used the Bang error subsystem in PDE to give me a nice friendly string.
Text.
And it has a message, and this is the thing that is missing, and it has a language exception. What is not part of this, and it's inferred, is the capturing of the stack trace. By calling this function, you capture the stack. And so there's two things that we haven't seen. We haven't seen the message, and we haven't seen the language exception. So the way you see the language exception is, and as I said, PDE does this automatically for you if it exists, is if you open up the structure, there is these two things down the bottom. The nested exception, and there's a type and exception. So there's different ways of packing it, or different styles, and then the pointer to it. If this STOTUS exception happened because of an unhandled CLR exception, be that the managed CLR or the MRT CLR, it is packed into here. Yeah. And so we have a pointer to roughly an SOS that we can call. And in this case, it doesn't, right? All it has is a stack. There was a CXX, this one. A C++ exception was thrown from SQLite wrapper. And that's about all we can say about it. That's literally all we have. So one of the things that can happen, and it's by chance, it's a statistical anomaly, is the thread that is throwing can happen to be the current thread. So see how this is thread 28? Mm-hmm. And that's defined by the last event, so C20. So we go tilde dot, and the current thread is C20. That's where it came from, right? 28. It can happen that when you execute this awaitable task, it didn't get thrown off onto another thread. There was enough CPU power left to actually run it local. Oh. So I don't know whether we're going to get this or not, but we'll have a look and see how we go. We may, and actually in this case we do get it. We actually, this point here has actually been torn in time, and we've actually got the same stack. It's a chance thing. It's based on load, it's based on scheduling, all done within WinRT. Mm. But in this case, you happen to get it, which means we actually have a stack where normally you wouldn't, which means we can go rampant with DPX and find evidence. And on this thread, we find some objects, but we're not going to have symbols for it, I'm guessing. No, it's a bright red. And you actually can see the stoke exception being thrown remotely. That's how we actually see it elsewhere. We get one string, which is ASCII, and that's about it. So with this one, you don't really have any additional detail except for what the stack is, which is something SQLite, so something SQL-esque. And the object invoke has disconnected from the client. So this was probably talking to this foreground program was probably talking to a background program.
Some SQL.
Some SQL provider.
Provider, yeah.
And then that background provider disappeared. The socket dropped or whatever, but that's why it crashed.
So this could be some kind of network error or maybe or some
locally
process on the same box or went away.
Yep.
Yeah.
So in that case, we didn't find the message either. And we'll use another example and hopefully find something. So let's try background task host. Once again, 27B, dance to exception. Now this one, here's our stack. No symbols to MS Core Lib. You can see the language exception. I'm not going to kind of show the associate. This has done all the magic for you at the bottom, but I'm going to show you how the magic came in because these were filled in. Mm. And this actually is, you get to a point where you kind of, it's like the Matrix. We've talked about this before. There's certain numbers you know are certain things. Mm-hmm. 80 on the front, it's an H result. Mm-hmm. Or C0 on the front, it's an H result. Mm-hmm. 7 on the front, or 7 FFF type things, they are the highest value of a data segment. Instruction pointer. Oh, sorry. It's the load address of an instruction.
The signature up there looks like ASCII. That 5345303.
It is, and it's because they're between 50-ish, which is where the ASCII table starts. Actually, I might actually bring that up.
ASCII. It's just those numbers in the 3 to 5 range are your characters.
It's the ABCD start point. So there's numbers are in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And then 41 in hex is 41 to all the way up to roughly 70 something. So that 40 to 70 range.
Yeah. Those are kind of looking alphabetical.
And there's a command called dot formats that gets a number and tries to give you all the representations of it. And, you know, it doesn't look like. It's a semi-decent time, actually, which is actually kind of ironic, because it actually is this one, stowed exception version 2.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Is the signature for the,
Sure. But actually, that's actually quite interesting that it's so close to a decent time.
usually that's all way off.
Yeah, it's usually in the weeds. Yeah. And same thing, so this one describes that this structure below it is version 2, which is why when I clicked on that hyperlink in DSE, it gave me the version 2 rendering of it. Mm-hmm. And then same thing with this guy.
That kind of looks textish too.
It is. And this one is packed the other way around. So the top one is packed It's designed to be packed for dot formats.
MF, yeah.
And this one's the other way around. Language exception object, it's L-E-O, it's not a zero, it's an O, version one. Language L-E-O. Exception object, version one.
So that's another signature.
It is. And so it says that this guy is a language exception object. Now, because list modules, mask, I don't want verbose here, I just want to list them. I just want to find out if it's a CLR. It is. It's a CLR app. The other one is MRT, it's not. So I know this is a CLR, managed CLR exception object. And the way that we decrypt that is to have SOS loaded. Now we've talked about this before, core DLL. We've got the DAC, we're required to do it. And dot chain will show us all the debug extensions we have loaded. And there's SOS loaded nicely.
Nice.
The command we need, so it's, there's the address right there. I should grab the whole thing if I want. Doesn't really matter. And it's dump CCW, dump com callable wrapper. So in .NET, the pointers are movable, but if you put a com callable wrapper around it, it gives it a point in space that it won't move. And so that's important. So if something garbage collects, this value stays valid after a garbage collection. It's like a pointer to the object that is movable. Com callable wrapper just tells us where it is, and it even tells you that, you know, it's got all these types and stuff. This manage object is the address required for a bang PE call. Alright? And so if we do a bang PE, we get it. If I had clicked on it, it's just going to do a DO, which is the other way of seeing it, and we talked about that last week as well. So once again, here you get the bang PE. So what you've got, and DSC does this automatically for you, is you've got the native way of explaining it, and roughly this is MS Corelib changing a com exception into a CLR exception, sorry, a native exception to then raise it through stow exceptions to then pack it and then to, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, back in time, a CLR exception happened, and this was the first one. So the music deal app, I think this is, data later feed exception. So something happened about the data. And so we may, via luck on this thread, might, yeah, there's only one string on it. You may or may not be able to work out, you know, what exactly the exact context of this was. But the point is, the music deal app crashed because of this thing. Data. There's no message. Yeah. There's no inner exception, so no, you know, cause that caused the cause. And you're kind of at the limit of what you can do. But at least you know.
But you kind of went from just background task host, did something, we don't know what that means, to now we know it's a problem with this music deal shared app.
I mean, data layer suggests to me that either something got corrupt on disk or something about networking maybe went bad and didn't deal with it very well.
Yeah.
So there is another command in DSC, in PDE, in the debugger extension called bgtask. And since we're in a background task, it tries to find all of them. And yeah, I don't think the symbols are public though, unfortunately. So it will find the information about the background task, and it'll tell you who it's associated with and its state and all these other things. So it will go off and find these things. And that was quite fast to find. It actually scanned the entire dump file for these and found them. But unfortunately, it doesn't have the data type. It doesn't have the symbol, so we can't get much further. But if you're internal, bgtask. So we've got another one right here. So the first one was a music deal app. 27B again. And this one is very similar. general exception, I hate these ones. It roughly says there's nothing specific about
CLR. Something failed.
Something failed, but at least we know it's in the CLR. So I don't know if we've talked about this. I think we have talked about this. Is these two numbers here are called the facility, and each one of them is a product, or an area at least. And so PDE knows how to decode these and has a massive table inside itself of all the registered ones, because it's like a consortium agreed list. And so it knows that two digits are CLR, and then it decodes the 1500 error code. Same thing again, rubbish stack, we haven't got symbols, but then it falls through to a HTTP exception. So this HTTP exception actually had a web exception. So HTTP obviously is a protocol on top of IP, and so they modeled the same thing in .NET the same way. They have a web class does all the work for an HTTP request. Mm. Now in this one, if we drill down, the remote name could not be resolved. So it couldn't actually resolve xboxlive.com. Oh. DNS was no good at that point. So DNS failed, this got thrown up, it caught it, it packed it as an inner exception on itself, and then it threw it as an HTTP request exception, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know if these have any private variables in them, make them any interesting. Some serialization private, but nothing major. And nothing. Well, there's the status code, and the status was 1. So not over the, and the internal status code. So, but this might be like 404 or stuff like that.
Yeah, well, but it's not 0, so that's.
And then web response. So if it actually had got to the point where it was downloading content, the response would be an object there. So, but out of pure luck, see if it was scheduled on the same thread. It was scheduled on the same thread. And then context where result, and you might be able to find something more in here, but you already kind of got root cause at this point.
It was some sort of a problem finding that web server.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to find anything more. Yeah, so it was trying to do a synchronous send, but we know the root cause already.
And it didn't handle it.
Yep, so we've done those two. I'm just going to shove those in the dump pile. And we did the WWA host, didn't we? That's, and we did this last week. So Solitaire, this is a good example. So now we're moving into more the XAML space. So those two were a store application failing with a stored exception caused by a CLR exception.
Right.
Now we're going to move into ones where instead of being invoked by CLR, it's going to be invoked by XAML. Right? XAML's the rendering engine. So let's do a DSE and see what we get. Now in this case, I believe we're going to get more than, yeah, we got 5 exceptions. Right? So there's a fair few. So there, I'm just going to do a CLS and do it again. The banner of PDE got in the way. You'll see that sometimes it repeats over and over again, and it's just as it's getting thrown throughout the system. Now in this case, all 5 of them are the same. They actually are all the same class, the same stack, and the same exception code. But that's not necessarily true. You can see one exception code and one stack turning into getting thrown and caught, and rethrown as a different code with a different stack. This just happens that it's gone through repetitive of itself.
It just happens that this stowed exception called over and over.
Yeah. So this one is in DirectUI. So DirectUI actually has an error system that the symbols are public for at the moment. Whether they're going to be in the future, I don't know. But at the moment, they are public. And so you'll notice that we've just got that thing, and we haven't got any additional error object underneath it. There's no associated object. You know, which is usually just CLR objects, and we can confirm that by clicking on it and seeing everything is null, right? Mm-hmm. If we remember that we've got the word DirectUI on there, and XAML's DirectUI, let's make that clear, we know it's XAML orientated. Now, XAML is a scripting engine, interpretive engine, so there's no code, right? And that's why you don't really see any application code here, because it's interpreting the XAML. Right. It's like interpreting a web page. You don't see the code for the web page, right? And so you're kind of relying on the XAML's internal state machine to actually work out what's going wrong. Mm-hmm. In particular with this error code, which is one of the most rubbish error codes ever. It's up.
Unexpected failure.
Yeah, I mean, people, unexpected means, I mean, it's kind of a coding practice that when you initialize an H result, you initialize it to unexpected because there should be a code flow through the module through the function that should set it either to SOK for success or something that's specific.
Right.
So unexpected usually means that it's actually gone through on a code path that it was unexpected. That's if you code correctly. So, but if you're lazy, you might just use it.
Just throw it.
Yeah. Well, you should be using eFail for. For the negative case, not unexpected. Expected is meant to be, I've initialized the variable on the premise of, hey, look, there's a mistake here, if I overthrow it. So the point is, we've got a rubbish error code. This is going to get us nowhere. We've got XAML interpreting stuff, so we have no idea where we are on that page. About the only thing you know is that it's an animation timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so this, what was this? This was solitaire. All right. So. One of the things that you get out of the way XAML is proffering up its errors is it will be on the exception stack. It just so happens the way it's architected and stuff, it will be on the exception stack. And you can see other direct UI functions happening here. And actually we get some hint of what's going wrong. We were doing XAML, UI elements, and then we actually went into COM to get to the CLR. Had an unhandled error from the CLR and then went back into rendering XAML code, and then here's the error helper. And this line here is what we are looking for.
Mm.
So I'm going to do this without looking at the symbols because it works, right? Purely because I don't want you to get trapped into needing symbols in the future, right? So one of the things that co-originated language error language exception does is it makes an interface pointer called irrestricted error info. What we have to do is find that, because once you find that that class that invokes that interface, you'll get the H result, you'll get the message, and you'll get the stack. And it's the message that matters here, because it's the only thing left that has evidence. And so what we need to do is find that. And I'm just going to do a raw string scan. And we've already found the strings. There's two strings. There is roughly a public one and a private one. This is the public version of the string, and this is the private version of the string. So it's just depending on what type of thing you're proffering up, you may have an internal, like a debugger, a developer-centric one, which is this bottom one, and one which is designed to go on the screen, right? So a task was canceled. So if you do nothing, if you just see a XAML thing in DSE and do a string scrape on the exception thread and get a string like that, you really have done all the correlation logic you need to do.
Mm.
I will show you one more thing. Once again, show me all the data types, DT. If you can't remember what the switches are, just run them all. I'm just trying to filter it down so there's less on the screen. The point is you want to try to find someone who implements the irrestricted error info interface, which this class does. PDE knows how to find these. It actually, see how it's blue? It's actually mangled the pointer and reworked out the VF table and all this other magic, so that all you have to do is click on this and you get a class. The DPXDU string searching, it just found this object and then found these inside it. That's how it worked, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's good. Here's this exception pointer, much like we saw in the exception record. You haven't got any further. The only thing you may find is the H result, right? Remember over on the distant thing, it was FFFFF.
Mm-hmm.
Here we actually have an H result. So that's actually
more useful.
Yeah. Now we can scrape the stack for things like that too. Now, the operation was canceled. So a task was canceled.
Sounds a lot like a task was canceled.
Yeah, a task was canceled is more the XAML level word for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the CLR. So this is the way the Windows renders this error code. Actually, I don't know if this one, it doesn't have it. This is the way Windows kind of, or WinRT renders the error code. And this is the way, this is the string that the .NET does the error code. They're roughly the same thing. Look at both of them because of the next step. Because this stack happens to actually have the CLR report error on it, mm-hmm. it is the last exception stack and it is a CLR candidate. So if we do bang PE, there is actually one, right? So we know that it was a task was cancelled. So even though the CLR's decrypting of this error code is operation was cancelled, somewhere in the code, it decided to actually set the message differently.
Mm-hmm.
So be it.
Right.
That's the message that went into originate language exception. That's the message that went into the COM restricted error and the R restricted error info interface.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we finally got to. So even though we've gone from the stow exception to the XAML, and the XAML is just nothing, and it had a terrible error code, the FFFF error code, by jumping back to the exception thread and finding, and this is the important bit, finding evidence of direct UI on it, particularly finding the error class, we know that the stow exception and this thread relate.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we call speculative analysis in Bang Analyze. So there's all the things that we have to code. We go, I saw this, then I saw this, then I went and did this step and blah, 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 blah. And I can do it with or without symbols and all these other things. I can do it in mini dumps and I can do it in heap dumps. Because of all that, we have an error code that's decent. We have an error code here that matches this
mm-hmm.
in the Bang PE. We can trust that this stack is what happened. So what happened was a task was canceled. In other words, the program was told to suspend.
Mm-hmm.
And this this task, which was doing content CDN, is usually content data network or delivery network or whatever it's called, aka get me some data off the web.
Mm-hmm.
It was waiting for a web call. It got canceled. This asynchronous thing got canceled. And then they didn't have an exception handler for cancel exception around this particular code block. And I'm guessing because there's file exists and all these other things, I'm guessing we might find some stuff on the stack. Nah, nothing major. We can find the exception, but we don't really find nothing really file or network oriented. But this thing crashed because it was the task was canceled. Tasks are canceled because you're suspending. That's usually the reason.
Mm-hmm.
Some very transitive, causic stuff.
And it's the kind of thing that might not be caught very well if you're a developer and you're testing your app. You're probably not going to see a lot of those cases where it just goes away.
Well, the DNS one's a classic example of that.
Yeah.
How often are you going to test it with a bad DNS? All of a sudden, right?
Yeah.
It's all the edge cases.
You don't realize that you don't sort of account for that possibility in your exception handling.
Yeah. So I've only got a couple left, but too late. This one's a kernel dump. We're going to do that next week. Mm-hmm. And then Explorer was just an exception. This is just a crash. And so it crashed on that line, on some shell code. Stop scrolling. Shell crash doing that.
Create default.
It's, oops.
Create default context menu.
It's oldish. Get an update.
And
done.
The context menu thing also would kind of make me think, well, maybe you've got some third party context menu extensions.
Yeah.
Maybe you've got something in there that's causing.
And then the last one I have, so we've done Solitaire just then. Is this WMI one. And this, we actually did a whole show on this. So instead of me doing it again, which is kind of pointless, we'll just link through to the previous debug of that dump file. Mm. And that leaves the kernel one, which is a good place to stop because it's quite different.
Yeah.
And you can take control.
All right, we'll do that one.
We'll do that next week.
Awesome.
So.
All right, so that's our show. Thanks for watching. As always, if you have questions or comments, put them in the show notes down there. Or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And thanks for watching.
See you next week.
Bye.